Alrighty, gang, check it out. I'm very, very excited to announce this. This is a new sponsor for Active Cell Protection and the flagship sponsor for the Active Cell Protection podcast. The company's name is Bond. It's a personal security platform. Basically, it's something to use between, hey, everything's fine, I'm just walking to my car, and dialing 911 because there is an actual emergency. They call it the I'm Uncomfortable button. It's an app on your phone, and what it does is allows you to get instantly in touch with a personal security professional, advisor, who can be there on the phone with you and kind of monitor what's going on around you. If you need help, they can get it to you. They will have your location because of the app. It gives you and your loved ones an instant-on security agent, basically, so you're never alone. Bond agents engage with any perp that's around you, and perps don't want witnesses, so the idea is you're not by yourself. They have a 100% track record deterring crimes of opportunity because it's like installing a can of OC spray on your phone. It's for when you can't carry tools or your loved ones who refuse to carry tools. It's a fantastic product. Check it out. Check out Bond's special ASP discount at the following link. It is, see if I can get this right, get-asp.com/bondios. get-asp.com/bondios, all one word, and check it out. And hey, if you get it, leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Thanks so much. Well, alrighty, gang. Welcome back to the Active Cell Protection Podcast. I am yet again your host, Mike Bulliver, and I remain with God's will and your listenership. Your favorite former Fed with me today is a new friend of mine, and I know I always say that, but I mean it every time. My new friend's name is Thomas. Thomas is from Boca Raton, or Raton, depending on who you are, Florida, which is a lovely spot. We talked about that a little bit before we hit the record button. We might get into that later. He is currently a campus safety officer, and he is married with some kids. Thomas, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Let's talk about married with some kids. So I've mentioned it, I think, here before on the podcast that we had some kids come stay with us who were going through a rough patch. Our younger daughter's best friend, her mom passed away rather unexpectedly at a young age, and she ended up coming to live with us for a few years, kind of while she finished school and while she was in her young adulthood, to give her a place to stay that, you know, where she felt comfortable. And so we call her our other daughter. We call her our fake daughter. She calls us fake parents as kind of a running joke. It's all in good fun, by the way, for the record. And you have something similar to that. Talk to us about that.
Well, I was married, and she had already had a 5-year-old son. And together we had my daughter. And through school and all of the years, one of my daughter's friends was continually staying with us. And then her mother had some problems. So she ended up staying with us, and we became foster parents because everybody was telling us, listen, you get in the foster system and then she can get health and college and things like that. So my wife and I, at the time, we went and took all the foster parenting classes and became licensed foster parents. And now she's graduated with a master's from FAU.
Oh,
and
I love that.
Actually works at the university I work at.
No kidding.
And my biological daughter has two grandchildren and lives in Gainesville with her husband.
I love everything about that. One of the things that Active Cell Protection does every year, most people have heard of it who watch the channel, we have our annual conference, and that conference is held at the Flint Hills Foster Teen Camp in Manhattan, Kansas. And the purpose of that camp is to take foster teens who almost certainly otherwise wouldn't have anything remotely like a summer camp experience. And for free, they get to come to this camp throughout the summer and do various things and kind of work through some of their problems that seem to be inherent in the foster care system, and talk about Jesus, which is a triple win. So it's great you were able to do that, and that you were willing to do that, because the regular foster system is unfortunately not a great place for a young person to be. So kudos to you for doing that. So talk to us about we spoke briefly before we started, but talk to me about sort of your self-defense journey. You're now a campus safety officer. your story, the main story happened a long time ago. So kind of talk us through before that story started. Were you a self-defense minded kind of a person? Did you have a CCW permit? Did you carry pepper spray? Did you do any kind of martial arts? Anything like that?
It all started basically back in eighth grade because, you know, what it's the SATs or whatever. They give you those aptitude tests or whatever. And basically with my dyslexia and things, they said, all right, your son's not going to qualify to get into any college. So they set up tours of all these trade centers. I could have been a beautician or a firefighter, but I chose law enforcement. Mm-hmm. So through the, you know, eighth and ninth grade, then my junior, senior year, I was in like full uniform going to this police academy. My junior year, I was there all morning long and then would come back to my high school, but I was still in uniform and took my regular couple of classes at my high school. And then my senior year, I was going, and then they started a cadet program at the local township police department. Mm-hmm. And I started doing ride-alongs and things with the Perry Township Police Department.
Very cool. So that sounds like it's way more, that was more integrated into the school than anything I ever had. I grew up in Montgomery County, Maryland, and we had our Montgomery County Police Department, which is the main law enforcement agency in that county, had an Explorer program, which sounds very similar, although it wasn't related to my high school at all. I would go to school, and then at night, a couple nights a week, we would go to the academy and have classes and learn how to, you know, drive cars defensively and take fingerprints and all that kind of stuff. And there was a uniform involved. And I think you'll agree that anyone who's thinking about going into law enforcement, any young person who's still young enough, I think you can do it from like 15 or 16 to 21, that it's a fantastic way to find out if that really is for you or not. You get a firsthand view. Was that your experience as well?
I've always been more of like the protector. I can't just go out hunting and say, oh, I got the biggest buck. But, you know, if it comes down to like a survival kind of thing, I'm usually running into the fire or into the chaos. But that all started when, you know, I was working with the police department and just doing ride-alongs. And I was always the bigger kid in school. Mm-hmm. So my buddies would be like, oh, listen, I want to, you know, get on the wrestling. So we'd wrestle, or my one friend, he's passed, but he was into martial arts. So we were always doing nunchucks or karate moves and kicks and just doing that kind of stuff. So it kind of just dribbled on from there.
So I have to confess, you did write a fair amount about your incident in the email. And I don't, honestly, at this moment, I don't remember how your story went. So can you walk us through the story that you wrote in about and kind of where you were, what was happening, and what transpired?
Well, my girlfriend at the time, she had a 2-year-old son. She was at work and I was home. He was sleeping. And me, with always wanting to be in law enforcement, the lights and stuff flashing outside, I go and stick my head out, see what's going on. The sheriffs were talking to the lady next door. Mm-hmm. And I figured, okay, it's like a domestic or something. So I go back in the house and I'm watching TV and I hear a noise in the back room. And this is, I wasn't allowed to have firearms and stuff. So as soon as I moved to Florida way back in 84, that's the first thing I was able to buy myself. So I had my Smith & Wesson So of course I grab that and go, and the neighbor guy was trying to open the window and climb in that back room. And as he's climbing in, I was like, "You're not hiding in here." And I didn't point it at him, but I had it in my hand as like an intimidation tool, I guess.
So he's trying to get into your back window to avoid the police. Is that right? The sheriff's department?
Yes. Okay. He was trying to hide in our house to get away from them. And I told him he wasn't hiding in our house. Right. And he saw me and quickly, you know, jumped back into the bushes and took off. And I went out and told the officer, I said, "If you're looking for her boyfriend or husband, he just tried to climb in my room and he took off running." But I don't know if it was any big thing or they just radioed for somebody, because they didn't go looking. So,
well, I can speak to that. There's a couple of reasons that might be. One might be that they weren't sure they had PC to arrest him yet. The other more likely possibility is they might have had a perimeter set up already. So they had, you know about this from your time as a cadet. They might have had a perimeter set up so that they, you know, they already knew he was going to bump into another officer or another deputy. But who knows? Was this guy ever arrested? Do you know? And if so, was he charged?
I never followed up with it. It was one of those that, you know, I made it through the night. Nothing happened. So I just pretty much forgot all about it. And then started seeing podcasts. And I was like, you had one that was an older, because I figured this being so long ago,
right,
that it wasn't relevant. But then, like I was saying earlier, thinking back, the actions I did that night could have changed my whole life.
Certainly. Let's talk about the incident, and then I want to delve into that a little deeper when we're done talking.
Okay.
So you'd mentioned intimidation tool, having the firearm, is that, and that works probably most of the time. Did you have a plan for what to do if the gun didn't scare him and your size didn't scare him and he continued into the house? Did you think about that, or were you just hoping it would work?
No, I didn't think anything of it. I just knew somebody was coming in the house. And if he would have come in, honestly, at that time, I have no idea what I would have done.
Yeah, and that's cool, especially because you were a younger guy. I want all of our listeners and viewers to have thought this stuff through, so that we could tell these stories, so they don't have to think this stuff through, because they get a benefit of your mental rep, right? What happened to Thomas back in the 80s can help them think through, oh, well, I hadn't thought of that. Maybe somebody breaks in and I run down the hall with my gun, and they're not intimidated. Then they rush me. What can I do? Because in that moment isn't the time you want to be thinking through your legal options. Well, the guy's not armed, but he's in my house. Do I have a stand my ground law in my, you know, in my state? Do I feel like I have to shoot this guy? Can I maybe overpower him physically? Thomas, you're a big guy. I'm a big guy. These are all considerations that I think people should go over in their mind if they're going to have a gun in their house. They're going to have a gun for self-defense, you know, long before it ever happens. And so now someone can hear this podcast and be like, oh yeah, I hadn't thought of that. If I come out with my shotgun or my 357 Magnum into the hall and the bad guy is like, I'm not scared of you, and then rushes me, must I pull the trigger? Can I retreat into safety? Do I have a door on my bedroom or a safe room, like a bathroom with a reinforced door that I can retreat to? These are all things we want to think about in advance. A while back, John and I covered a video on the main channel. It'll be more recent for you and I, Thomas, versus when this podcast airs, obviously. But there was a video of an officer on a traffic stop, and he told the guy, hey, you got a warrant, step out of the car. That guy didn't step out of the car. And the officer then positioned himself in front of the car and drew his gun with the obvious assumption this guy was about to bail, which he was about to try to run away. And
he kicked his girlfriend out, at least.
He did. He was chivalrous in that regard, at least. But with the point of the story was he ended up on the hood, and he had a couple opportunities to jump off the hood while the guy was moving at a low rate of speed, and chose to stay on the hood because, I'll tell you why, because he never thought this scenario through. It never occurred to him that somebody would not be intimidated by him in front of the car and his gun out and just go, okay, well, I'm going to go 3 miles an hour until you move and then jump on the hood. He hadn't, because it's not something you think through because you don't jump on hoods, but he hadn't thought this through in advance. So he just got, he got vapor locked, ended up clinging to the car for a long time until the guy bucked him off at a high rate of speed and broke his back, all over a warrant from another state, I think. So I think it's great that we can have these talks and discuss this stuff and go through it in a mental rep before it ever happens to anyone else in the real world. I would say if you're going to, and this is, look, you were a young guy, this was years ago, so this is not a criticism of Thomas at all. But if you, dear listener or viewer, is in a position where you got someone in your house, it's definitely not an invited guest, you have to have thought through, okay, the big consideration is, do I have kids in the house? Do I have other people in the house, especially between me and this bad guy? In which case, you know, you might want to have someone call 911 or whatever, but get out there and make sure he doesn't get to those people. But if you're by yourself, or you and your significant other, for example, are in a bedroom, you know my advice, I'm going to beat it to death here, but my advice is, hey, call 911, arm yourself, obviously, lock the door, and direct police in to outsource your violence to them. And if you lose a TV, if you lose a laptop or a tablet, or, you know, a vase that your grandmother gave you, that sucks really bad. And it stings to let the bad guy get away with your stuff. But it is better. It is infinitely better every day of the week than forcing a deadly force encounter and then ending up with a dead body in the middle of your living room and you not feeling 1,000% sure that you're not going to be charged with anything. You're not going to be civilly, you know, sued down the road. Whatever they're going to take, as bad as it sucks that they're going to take your stuff, is not worth you putting yourself in that position. What are your thoughts, Thomas? I don't want to have a monologue. I want to have a dialogue.
Well, it's the effects that if I would have done the wrong thing, if I didn't, because I had no plan at that time. Now, I kind of have plans, and I'll get into that. But if I would have shot an unarmed man, either trying to climb in my house or if he got in my house and I had shot him, I honestly don't think it would have been justifiable.
Okay.
So I wouldn't have gotten married. I wouldn't have had my kids. I wouldn't have this job I have now. I'd be in prison for an unjustified shooting, which would end up being a murder. And the life I have now would not exist.
Yeah. And I think it's fantastic that you had the time to reflect on that and be like, well, if this had happened, look, it could have gone basically one of two ways. Either the police arrive and they decide that, yeah, you were legally justified in doing what you did, or you weren't, right? So either they're going to dust you off and say, you know, sorry for your trouble, and maybe refer you to a counselor for counseling after a traumatic incident, or you're leaving in handcuffs because of this, right, wrong, or indifferent. The law is what it is, and it doesn't matter if we feel good about it or bad about it. The law is the law. So you end up going to jail, and maybe you don't get convicted, but now you've got attorney fees you've got to deal with. Plus, you've got to deal with the fact that you took a human life when it wasn't absolutely necessary. I'm not telling anyone what to do. I'm just saying these are all factors and circumstances that we're giving you the opportunity to go over in your mind and consider long before the event ever happens. And that's the whole purpose of this show. You were gonna expound on something there, Thomas. I don't want to forget. You were saying that it changed the course of your life, and there was something else you wanted to add to that, and I forgot what it was. I'm sorry.
Well, there was a couple quick questions.
Sure.
Tool fixation.
Okay.
You know, I was young. I was finally able to buy myself a handgun, and that's what I had. It's not like I was even thinking pepper spray or any other options, because I knew the person coming in was unarmed because you could see his hands as he's climbing up in the window. So right. As far as I knew at that time, he was unarmed. And thank God he jumped back and took off. But then the other day I was at the doctor's, and their office is diamond shaped. Like, you come in and you could go to two different ways, and then it connects again in the back.
Okay.
And this is just after all the earthquakes in Taiwan and New Jersey.
That was recently, so I remember.
The Taiwan had an earthquake years and years ago where thousands died, but they changed everything, their whole prepping and getting ready for the next one.
Building codes. Now,
I'm sitting in the doctor's office and thinking, okay, because I remember that church shooting where nothing was done correctly.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm sitting in the doctor's office thinking about those earthquakes. And then I'm like, okay, now if an active shooter came in here, what would I do? Now, I know that doesn't happen everywhere I go, except for when I go to Walmart. Right. But is that kind of odd to be like just having these deja vu moments where you're thinking, okay, now what would I do if?
No, no. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. That's exactly the kind of mentality we want to engender. Look, I think some people might listen to this show or watch the channel and think we want everyone to be paranoid and freaking out and constantly looking around. That's not true at all. We want you to enjoy your life. But yeah, especially if you're in a new situation, a new location, like a doctor's office or your kid's school or whatever, it's a fantastic mental exercise. And it keeps you sharp to be like, okay, I'm in the all-purpose room at my kid's elementary school right now. The exits are here, 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 and here. There's a police officer in the back right corner. So if somebody walks in here right now with an AK or an AR and starts mowing people down, what do I do? Do I grab my kid and try to skedaddle? Do I try to engage him? If I do engage him, will the officer think I'm a second shooter? These are all things that are very worthy of your thoughts and consideration. I want my defenders thinking these things through, not to the point where it gets weird or obsessive, obviously, but I think it's there's absolutely nothing wrong. In fact, I commend you for having these conversations with yourself. We do talk about having conversations with yourself quite a bit. What's the old joke? Roses are red, violets are blue. I'm schizophrenic, and so am I. I do want you to talk to yourself and talk yourself through scenarios, because that's the best way to prepare yourself, obviously, other than your actual physical training. You mentioned that you're a campus safety officer. Is that an armed position, if you don't mind me asking, or an unarmed position?
No, we are unarmed. We used to have OC and handcuffs and all that, but the person that did the training never sent in the certifications or the paperwork saying that we were
certified,
trained in all of these. So, and it's a private school, and there's not a lot of issues. So
right.
Now we don't have the OC and we don't have the cuffs and everything, but we do have medical kits, and just in case of any injuries, we do have, you know, a medical person on property. Sure. And the stuff I have, my ankle kit, because I'm out of doing the patrol all the time. I'm figuring my last 5 years I'm going to sit at the gatehouse, but I have a roadway right out in front of me, and the kids are constantly coming in and out through that gate, and they may not stop fully at the stop sign, or they may try and come in too fast. So I definitely have my ankle kit for any accidental stuff there, because the combat gauze would probably be what I end up using first.
Yeah, for sure. And I think another benefit of having someone with your mindset at the gate in the gate shack is that your eyes out there, you know, if someone is coming. Frequently, these things, especially church and school shootings, almost 50% of the time or more, I just made that number up. Let me stop. A lot of the time, church and school shootings will absolutely start in the parking lot, or the person is visibly armed and their intentions are pretty immediately obvious. We saw this at the art contest in Texas. that's in quotes, art contest they had a while back. We had that guy on the show. And it's true of a lot of the school and church shooters. You know, they're already, for some reason, they seem to follow a dress code. They're dressed all in black. They're wearing trench coats or whatever. Not that that's always the case, but they make themselves kind of obvious as a person about to come shoot the school up. So I like the idea that someone with your mindset is out there to potentially spot that. And even if you can't necessarily do a lot about it, at the very least, you can notify the school. I'm sure you have a radio, right?
Yes.
And let them know, hey, this is coming, and they can at least employ their defensive measures. So that's encouraging.
Yeah, Parkland's right around the corner from where.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have some of our staff have their kids went to that school. So.
Our good friend Stephen Williford called me not long ago. He called me after the Lakewood church, Joel Osteen's church in Houston, after that video came out of the rather poor showing on the part of security and law enforcement to an active shooter situation. And he said to me, make sure you tell officers, because this is what he does. He goes around the country talking to law enforcement and self-defenders. And he says, ask yourself, this is to the defender, what does your tomorrow look like after the day of something terrible like the Parkland shooting? What does your tomorrow look like? It could be a couple of things. If you're the defender and you engage or don't engage with a bad guy who's actively trying to hurt people, your tomorrow very well might be a flag draped casket because you tried to stop and you were killed in the process. And a hero's funeral, a hero's, you know, a memory of a hero who did heroic things. Or it could be you can't show your face in your town or maybe any town forever because of the shame that you feel that you didn't rise to the occasion during an event like that, and you waited for backup too long, or in the case of Uvalde, you stood around for an unholy amount of time while children were dying. Those are, or maybe you're the hero who made it through. You know, you went in and stopped it because you were confident in your equipment and your abilities, and you were able to stop the threat. What does your tomorrow look like is a fantastic way to encapsulate how you should view a situation like that, should you find yourself in one, God forbid. And I like to say to my friends and family, I hope I go the rest of my life and never, ever have to shoot and or shoot and kill someone. However, if there is someone who's going to predate upon children or churchgoers or mallgoers or whatever, I want to be there because I know I have a good chance in the skills, in the attitude, in the plan to stop that person from continuing what they're doing, which is a weird dichotomy. I don't want to shoot anybody. However, my prayer is, God, if there's someone nearby here thinking about doing something like that, put me in their way, please. At the very least, maybe I can slow them down long enough for uniform law enforcement to show up or whatever. But what does your tomorrow look like, I think, is a great way of encapsulating that. Thomas, that's about our time. I don't want to leave anything out. So was there anything else you wanted to discuss or mention before we part ways?
No, I mean, like just with an active shooter, I don't know if you could call that a third party encounter, you know, where you're just walking by and a couple of people are arguing. You have to mentally know that if you come across something like this, I mean, that's 100%. This is what's going on. For me, I would have to take action. Mm-hmm. I would probably end up, if I didn't do anything, then I would probably be like suicidal knowing that I let that go on.
And I think that's the attitude a lot of us have. And again, like no one absolutely knows what they're going to do in the moment of truth, right? You don't know until you're there, but preparing yourself with your training, your physical fitness and your mental preparation and your spiritual fitness and all those things, make the chances of you following through and doing the positive thing a lot, lot better. So, Thomas, I can't thank you enough for reaching out.
And I did get my mantis. I got my mantis set up. So I'm learning my draw to first shot and I'm getting 95s, 96s in that little like training. Like I'm not pulling it left, pulling it right. But right.
Very good. Yeah, we're big fans of Mantis. They've been the channel sponsors for a long time. And can you confirm for me that it, besides being good training, it's just a lot of fun to do?
It is. It is a lot of fun. And Okay, so you buy the unit. That's where you put out $100 or something, whatever one you get.
Mm-hmm.
But all the money that you're saving and training that you're getting from not having to buy ammo, you can do it here in my living room.
Right.
And I love it.
Yeah. The way I put it is it gamifies dry fire. It makes it fun and engaging, and you get the feedback's the best. It's the next best thing to shooting steel, where you get that immediate feedback. Okay, that hit where I wanted it to every time. So yeah, shout out to Mantis. So Thomas, don't hang up when I say goodbye, because you and I have some business to attend to after this. But if you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your viewership and your listenership. Do me a favor and leave us a review. And if you made it this far, let's think of a code word, Thomas, something out of the unusual they can put in their review to signal they made it this far. How about Boca Raton? How about that? Yeah, write Boca Raton in the comment. That way we know you made it this far.
Made it to the end.
One of my favorite tech podcasts is called Waveform, and it's a kid named Marquez Brownlee. He's a huge YouTuber. He's 17 or 18 million subs. And I just heard him do that today at the end of his podcast. If you made it this far, leave us a review and write Snickerdoodle. And then everyone who didn't make it this far will wonder what Snickerdoodle means. Anyway, Thomas, thank you again. I can't thank you enough. And we'll talk soon. Take care, buddy.
Yes, sir.